Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Major League Baseball trade deadline. It came down on Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, which was the 30th of July. And for the last however many years, you remember I mentioned my father earlier, back when he was the general manager. The trade deadline was June 15th. I remember when it was June 15th. I'm not sure my next guest does, because I guarantee he's younger than me. How much younger? I'm not exactly sure. Mike Exesa from CBSSports.com, MLB writer, good enough to hop aboard with us. Mr. Exesa, if you don't mind me asking, how many years you been on the beat?
This is 15 for me now.
15. Okay. Yeah. So, like I said, younger than me. Not a wet behind the ears kid, but younger than me, which is good. Do you remember when the trade deadline was June 15th?
I do not know.
See, I do remember certain things because I've been around a little bit longer. All right, Mike, unbelievably busy trade deadline, the busiest one I can remember in the last several years, 5, 10, 15, you go back as far as you want. This can comp with absolutely any of them. Why do you think it was that busy?
I think it was a lot of things. I think we had two teams in Washington and the Cubs who are these big money teams, recently won World Series, but their cores were starting to, I don't want to say get older, but it wasn't, they were approaching free agency and they were kind of transition to the next era there. So you had these two very motivated sellers at once, and I certainly think that helped. And I think you look at the postseason races, the White Sox have a huge lead, the Brewers have a pretty big lead, but the other divisions are all really close. The wild card races are pretty close. I think you have a lot of teams that were just motivated to get better, and you have a team like the Cubs, they traded so many players, they had something to offer everybody. So whether you wanted a reliever, or if you're the Yankees and you wanted a first baseman, or the Mets and a shortstop, they had something for everybody. So that led to a lot of trades. And it's just, it seems like we're just like the perfect storm, after last year when, there were like really no trades. Nobody really knew what was going to happen last year. I think it was just kind of like this perfect storm of, okay, we know what we have here. It's back to being a normal-ish season. So let's go get the help we need. The races are close. Let's do what we can to put our best foot forward.
How long before Juan Soto steps up and says, what the hell? We just won a World Series. You're taking all my guys away from me? Where the hell are we going? Does he get Mike Rizzo, or does his agent get Mike Rizzo on the phone and say, hey, if you're going to do this to the team, maybe it's best you move me too.
Yeah, I was thinking about that after the trade deadline, because Washington, they're obviously not good this year. They traded away Scherzer and Turner. And you look at the roster, there's Soto and then, maybe Victor Robles and maybe Carter Kaboom, maybe they could be part of the next winning team, but there's really not a lot of guys you're going to build around other than Soto, and their farm system was the worst ranked in baseball coming into the season. It's a little better now because of its trades, but it's not like they have this robust farm system that's going to just pump young talent to the roster and they'll be back in the race next year. They're going to be in a down cycle for a few years, and Soto's 3 years away from free agency. So if you're Washington, I feel like you got to give him either sign him to a long-term extension, give him like the Fernando Tatis contract or something along those lines where it's like a 14-year deal and he'll be here forever. Or you got to trade him and continue this rebuild, because if you're going to be bad for 2 or 3 years, that's going to walk you right up to his free agency. And is he going to want to stick around for that? What happens there? So I feel like this offseason would be the time to either sign him long-term, or at least listen to offers for trades. I mean, it doesn't hurt to listen, and I feel like he's so good. He's so young. He's got so many years before free agency. I can't even, like, comprehend what it would take to get this guy in a trade. I don't even know if there's a team out there that could put together a package that would satisfy what I'd want for him. But, yeah, I feel like if after all those moves, just how far away they look like they're from contention, they got to figure out what to do with Soto here. That's the next piece. I would sign him long term. That's what I would do if I was them. But I could at least understand if they explore the trade market a little.
It's so funny. I didn't even think about the extension. You're right to mention that. But if Washington does that the way that they do most contracts, their usual modus operandi, and yes, he's going to point to Fernando Tatis and say, here's where we start the conversation. 14-year contract somewhere there. Deferral's going to get past 2050 because they like to pay a little bit later down the line. They're going to pay Max Scherzer for years, even though he's going to no longer be there. Yeah, sometime four decades from now, they'll finish paying Juan Soto. That will be very interesting. All right. Yes, I thought it was more interesting what the Nats and the Cubs did than what some of the buyers did. But let's deal with the buyers. Big one being the Yankees. Big issue they had all year long was no left-handed hitting. Brett Gardner, their only one, and he's looking real old these days. They not only go out and get Gallo, but they also get Rizzo, which I did not see coming. And Rizzo has stepped in, and all he's done is hit homers since he put on the pinstripes. Brian Cashman did a good job of keeping that under wraps. Was there a market out there for Rizzo? Did they have to compete in that, or just happened to be a fit and the Cubs and the Yankees got that one done?
There was a market, but it wasn't a big one. There just aren't that many contenders that really needed a first baseman. The only other team that really kind of stands out as a good fit for Rizzo is the Red Sox. And we didn't hear anything connecting them, but it just seemed like a pretty natural fit there. And, you know, the Yankees kind of swooped in, and they already waited for Luke Voit to get healthy. They've done that this year. It burned them twice because he came back, got hurt again right away, and then he came back again, got hurt again. And they just said, forget it. We can't wait around for him anymore. We have to get some more reliability, more production from first base. And it's just a good fit for them, really, in every single way, because he's a lefty. He's got power. He doesn't strike out a lot like a lot of their other hitters. And he's not someone you really have to worry about, you know, coming into New York and being overwhelmed. You know, he's going to handle whatever they could throw at him there. So it's really a perfect fit for them. And Gallo was a good pickup, too. He's a flawed hitter, obviously. He strikes out a lot, but he's got his left-handed power. He gets on base a ton. He's a very good outfielder. He kind of he's underrated defensively. And so they made two really the Gallo thing, I could kind of see that coming a little bit because it was a good fit. Rizzo kind of came out of nowhere. And he's been great so far. You know, they played their first home game tonight. He's going to get a hero's welcome tonight when they play, I think, the Orioles tonight.
Here's my one question about Gallo and playing the outfield, because you're right. He's a very good right fielder. They've got a very good right fielder by the name of Aaron Judge. And for my money, neither one of those guys are a center fielder. If you're putting him in center field, you're not putting a great center fielder out there. And, oh, by the way, it's neither one of those two guys' natural position. So do you want to get either one of them hurt playing out of position? What are they going to do with center field? Are they going to play one of those two guys in center field for the rest of the year if they decide, yeah, Brett Gardner's just killing us at sub-Mendoza?
Yeah, well, Brian Cashman said that Brett Gardner's still the center fielder, but I'm not sure if I believe that. I think for the time being, they could play Gallo in left, Judge in right, and Gardner in center, keep Stanton at DH. When Luke Voit returns, it'll be interesting because you want to get him in the lineup. The guy led baseball in home runs last year. You don't want to make him a bench player. So if there's a scenario there, it would be Judge in center, Gallo in right, Stanton in left, and then Voit at DH. That would be the ideal alignment for them, and I think that's what they would do. If you give them a true serum, I think that's what they said, what they would tell you they would do in the postseason if they get there. In the regular season, doing that every day, maybe you don't want to do it. But postseason, yes, that's the best alignment. So I think for now, you're just going to see Gardner in center field most of the time. It'll be Gallo in left, Judge in right. And when they do put Stanton in the outfield, from what we've seen this weekend, it'll be Judge who plays center. And I think he'll be fine there. He's not going to be a Gold Glover or anything, but he's not going to kill them out there.
All right, you mentioned the Red Sox may have had some interest in Rizzo, couldn't get the deal done. The Yankees did. They did get Kyle Schwarber. Now, varying reports on when Schwarber will be back. Some say within the week he might get into a minor league rehab and be ready by the middle of the month. I've seen other reports say September 1st at the earliest. He was stone cold on fire when he went down with the injury with the Nationals. When do you hear Schwarber is going to be back, and where are they going to play him?
Like the middle of the month sometime, middle of August is when he'll return. He's missed about a month now, and he's going to need – it's not going to be one or two minor league rehab games. It'll be about a week and a half. So I figure the middle of August is probably the best case for them. And, I mean, all indications are they're going to play him at first base, and he has basically no experience there whatsoever. I don't know how that's going to go. You know, I know we're – it's kind of like first base is like, oh, you could just put anybody there, but that's not really how it works these days. And, you know, there's more, the first baseman's involved in more plays than any other position. You know, I don't think Schwarber will be a disaster there, but there's an experience there, and you got to, you know, when these situations arise, like where does he go for the cutoff play, you know, things like that. I always kind of worry about that stuff when you're putting somebody inexperienced over there, but if he, as long as he hits, they're not going to care. So I think, you know, middle of August, I'll come back, and I'm just going to kind of hold out and hope for the best at first base.
Mike Axiso, CBSSports.com, MLB writer, our guest here on CBS Sports Radio. All right, jumping over to the National League West. There were some reports, and by some very good MLB writers and reporters, TV, print, everywhere, that said the Padres were close to obtaining both Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. Was surprised that Turner got dealt just in general, and I'll get back to that in a second, but didn't happen. Ends up the Dodgers jump in, thwart the Padres getting them, and land both players for themselves, give up a really good package of prospects to do so, and they had those type players to be able to pull that kind of deal off. Talking to Scott Miller, one of my favorite MLB guys last night, he's a San Diego guy, said, the Padres being close on that deal was grossly overestimated, that it really wasn't that close. They were just in conversation. How much does that trade swing the balance of power in the NL West in your mind?
That's a pretty big one. You know, I thought Scherzer would have been perfect for the Padres because, I mean, he's perfect for every team, obviously, but the Padres in particular, they've had a bunch of rotation injuries. Blake Snell hasn't pitched well this year, and they really needed another high-end arm there. So when I saw those reports that, okay, they're getting close to a deal, I'm like, all right, perfect, that makes sense. And then to see that fall apart, even if the closeness of that trade was overstated, just to see that fall apart and then to see him go to the Dodgers with Turner, and that's a real big blow because the Padres were already trying to make up ground on the Dodgers. I still think, even though the Giants are in first place, I still feel like the Dodgers are the best and most talented team in baseball, and now you give them Scherzer and Turner, and it feels almost like it's almost unfair that they have this kind of roster put together. You know, for the Padres, I don't know how – it's got to be demoralizing to see that. And they had a horrible weekend. You know, they lost to the 2-3 to the Rockies. Tatis got hurt again. Their pitching kind of blew up in some spots. I mean, that was just like a real demoralizing 4 days there for them. But they're still a really good team. I'm not sure they would have overtaken the Dodgers even with Scherzer, but just losing him to the Dodgers, I mean, that's just – that's a tough blow.
Let me ask you an opinion question on that one, because I've been doing this a long time. And when the Yankees used to just spend, George Steinbrenner going into his wallet, they acquire a player, he's making more, and their payroll is so far exorbitant above everybody else. Everybody hated the Yankees. They were the evil empire. They were termed that by their rival, the Boston Red Sox, but the rest of the nation bought into the same premise. Yeah, the Yankees just buy pennant after pennant after pennant. Nobody seems to be saying that about the Dodgers. And I know there are now restraints in place with luxury tax and everything else. But what the Dodgers have done these last couple of years, they've gone pretty heavily into their wallet to be able to fund this team that went to a couple of World Series, came up short, won one last year, maybe the favorites again this year. Why do you think people don't attack the Dodgers the way they used to the Yankees when they were far and away the biggest spender in baseball year in and year out? Is it an L.A. thing? Is it a New York thing? Is my estimation accurate as far as you're concerned is comping those two teams and the national critique they used to get?
You know, I think it really just comes down to the winning. You know, the Yankees, they won 4 in 5 years. The Dodgers have just the one. You know, they lost the World Series twice, and maybe if they won those World Series in 2017 and 2018 and they have 3 in 5 years or whatever it would have been, maybe then everybody would hate them more because, I mean, that's just sports fandom. You know, it happened with the Warriors and the NBA. Everybody kind of started to hate on them because they were winning every year. And if the Dodgers had pulled out those two World Series, then maybe there would be more kind of animosity directed their way. And I think it's kind of starting to – we're starting to see that kind of fan hatred headed their way because teams, you know, you just hate whoever does good, especially when it's not your team, obviously. And It could be a New York and LA thing. I mean, you know, East Coast bias. I mean, the fact of the matter is it is a thing. There's more attention paid on the East Coast teams because there are more of them and they've been around longer. That's just the way it is. So I think that's part of it. I think it mostly just comes down to winning. You know, if they win a couple more World Series here, people are going to hate them just as much as they hated the Yankees all those years.
Dodgers go back-to-back this year, then the hate will be ratcheted up. That's a big green jealousy thing. So I like your answer. That's a different way to look at it. I hadn't looked at it that way. That's a good point. All right. We know the big moves, and we've touched on a bunch of them here, the biggest names and the major players. Was there a deal that you think kind of went under the radar, that it was either a perfect fit guy or an underrated guy, that he fills a need guy, that someone went out and got the guy, and between now and the end of the season, come playoff time, we're going to go, damn, that guy really helped them get to the postseason?
You know, it didn't happen at the trade deadline. It happened a few weeks ago. I think maybe even 2 months ago it happened, when the Brewers got Willie Adames from the Rays.
True.
Because their shortstop position has been – it's been like a revolving door for like 5 or 6 years now, since they traded away J.J. Hardy all those years ago. They got out ahead of the market there. You know, the trade happened in May, I believe, and that just, you don't really see trades happening then. But they made the move early to get the player who kind of solidified in a very important up-the-middle position there. And he's been great for them, and they gave up 2 relievers to get him. And that's the kind of trade you make every day of the week, because relievers, you can't really, you know, one of them's already on the injured list with the Rays. You just can't count on those guys. So I thought the Brewers were real smart to kind of jump ahead of the market there, get the guy they need right away instead of waiting until the deadline. So they had him for 2 extra months, and now they're 6-7 games up or whatever it is. When you look at right at the trade deadline, I like some of the stuff the A's did, getting Yan Gomes and Josh Harrison from the Nationals. I thought that was really kind of smart, under-the-radar moves that just were huge upgrades over the guys they were running out there. I don't know if they're going to catch the Astros, but that was the kind of, you know, kind of smart A's move where they didn't really give up much, but these guys that they brought in are so much better than what they had that they're going to help a lot these next 2 months. Like, the Adames one really stands out, but the A's on the trade deadline day, that A's trade is one I liked.
I like both of your points. Milwaukee did get it done in advance, and it's been amazing. Adames has played well, don't get me wrong, but it was just like he showed up and everybody else got healthy and everything else clicked in. All the things around, like he had some kind of magic wand that he was waving above and beyond his own bat. Did Milwaukee do enough other than that? Yeah, they're going to win that division, and they've got a big enough lead that they weren't pressured to do something for today just to make the playoffs. They're going to get in, but you want to go ahead and win the World Series if you're at it. Did they do enough above and beyond that at the trade deadline for you?
I think they could have did a little bit more. You know, they added some to their bullpen, you know, like Daniel Norris and John Curtis. Those guys they're fine, but they're not really going to make a difference, I don't think. You know, first base has been horrible all season. Keston Hiura just doesn't look like he's working out. He strikes out so much. He misses so many fastballs. Eduardo Escobar's a good player, but he's never played first base until the Brewers threw him over there the other day. I feel like, you know, the Yankees were talking about trading Luke Voit. Luke Voit would have been a good fit for the Brewers because they have nothing at first base, really. I would have liked to see the Brewers be maybe a little bit more aggressive. I understand they didn't need to be because of where the division race is. But if you're trying to win the World Series, you know, that's the goal there. You don't want to just get in. You want to win the World Series. They could have maybe done a little bit more, you know, just a little bit more pitching, maybe a better first baseman. It wasn't a bad trade deadline. It was perfectly fine, good trade deadline for them. I feel like it just could have been a little bit better, though.
All right, one more quickie before we let you run. Non-playoff trade deadline related. The deadline came and went for the Mets to be able to sign their number one draft pick as a Kumar Rocker, who I actually talked to some people who saw him pitch and couldn't believe he dropped down all the way to number 11 in the draft. Maybe it was because there was a question about his elbow. The Mets didn't like the medicals, wanted to try and come down a little bit on the money, and Boris Kliant, of course, is going to reject something like that. Didn't get it done. They'll get the number 11 pick next year, and Kumar will go right back into the draft. But it doesn't do either one of them any good this year. I looked at it as a lose-lose situation. Do you agree, and how the hell did that happen?
Yeah, I agree. That's a lose-lose. I think the Mets in particular, they kind of botched the whole situation. And, you know, usually when you take this, you know, these days in the draft, you're supposed to know exactly ahead of time what everybody will take to sign. And And they use the later rounds of the draft to take, like, backup plans. Like, okay, if I can't sign Kumar Rocker, the Mets are left with, like, $1 million they can't spend anywhere now in draft pool money. You're supposed to have a backup plan somewhere in the late rounds where you could give the money to that talented kid who said he's going to school, but then you put $1 million in front of him and he changes his mind. They didn't take anyone like that, so their entire draft was, like, this, like, loss of just – they just left talent on the table there. So they really screwed that up. For Rocker, I mean, we don't know. There's so much conflicting information out there about whether the Mets actually dropped their offer, what each side wanted to do. You know, Boris is Rocker's a Boris guy, and they agreed to supposedly $6 million before the draft, and Boris held firm on that. I mean, Rocker's father was a professional football player. It's not like they're hurting for money, I don't think. So he's in position to kind of bet on himself, go back to school. I don't know. It just seems like it's not good for anybody. I feel like if you have a match, just sign him. You know, you get the 11 pick next year, but you got to wait a year. You're probably not going to get someone as good as Rocker. Just pay him. And if I don't know, if I was Rocker, I would just take the money, turn pro, get my career started. You know, I feel like it's going to be hard to kind of improve my situation next year because now there are those medical concerns. And even if he goes out and pitch well, people are going to say, like, well, look what happened last summer. So I don't know. I think that's such a lose-lose. The Mets kind of really screwed up the rest of their draft. They didn't do a good job preparing for a scenario in which Rocker didn't sign.
It is a lose-lose, but maybe the Mets lost a little bit more. I think that's a good way to look at it. Always a win-win when we get Mike Xyz on. Mike, thanks for hopping on with us today. Appreciate it greatly, bud.
Sure, happy to do it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.